Hey there, cycling fans, podcast aficionados, and the loyal listeners of the Between Two Wheels podcast. Thanks for joining us today. I'm just going to set the scene real quick. We're going to give a highlight of Nate Dunn's coaching tip. So those of you that are joining for some actual constructive knowledge, stay tuned. You're going to have that right away. And then for those of you that just want some silly commentary, we're going to jump right into the World Championships and some other exciting cycling news of the day with Chris Flower, Kurt Mills, and myself. So once again, if you want to make comments, subscribe, share the show, do so on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbeam, Overcast.fm, or Google Play. And without further ado, enjoy.
Hi, this is Nate Dunn from Data Driven Athlete with a quick coaching tip. So as many of us are heading into the off-season period, it's a great time to look closer at how much time we should take off the bike during this off-season period. So if you want to dig into this topic with a little more depth, you can check out a post over at our website titled Time Off the Bike, How Much is Too Much, written by one of our coaches, Matt Chatleong. But without getting into all those details, the most important thing to remember is that you should take as much time as necessary to make sure that you're fully mentally recharged and ready to aggressively attack your training for the upcoming season. So for some people, that might be 2 weeks. For some people, that might be even as much as 6 weeks. But more important than any of the detraining effects that might happen during this time is to not worry about any of those details, but to place most of your focus on ensuring that you're mentally recharged heading into the upcoming season. So if you have any more questions about this off-season period, or if you'd like to check out the post in more depth, you can head over to our website at datadrivenathlete.com. Thanks.
Welcome back to the Between Two Wheels podcast. This is Tyler Yonke, joined by Kurt Mills. Kurt, how
are
you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good, and Chris Flower. Chris, how are you doing today?
Doing well.
Great. Episode 18. We just came off of the World Championships in Bergen, is that it? Where the F was this place?
Yeah, that was where. It was in Bergen, I think.
And that's in Norway. Yeah, beautiful place.
Super clean.
Yeah, this is kind of my segue here, but I just thought about it. Have you seen the Netflix show Occupied?
No.
I have not. No.
Well, you should check it out. It's basically Russia invades Norway. And I love it for the fact that Norway's a gorgeous country. And then you got to see that in full view with the worlds, just not even the cycling itself, but this whole city, the country. And it was actually good. The weather wasn't bad as well. There's a little bit of rain here and there.
Okay. Is this a drama or?
No, I'm talking about the worlds now. We're going back.
That was a drama, though.
No,
the worlds.
Check it out. It's pretty good. Russia invades Norway and conflict ensues. Drama. It's quite enticing.
All right.
Well, let's deviate back to cycling. So worlds. We had our juniors, U23, men and women's, and world championship team time trial, time trials, and road races. Let's start off with the team time trial. Women and the men's both were won by Sunweb. What did you guys take away from either one of those?
I think the biggest thing is that is just the start of the Dutch domination of this particular world's event. Both teams were, I think, more or less led by Dutch riders. It was an impressive performance by both.
There was an American on Sunweb, the female, Corin Rivera.
That's true, yeah. I'm just talking about the trade teams are more or less Dutch.
And just giant Sunweb or Sunweb, whatever they are called in general, they've had an amazing year. Right, Dumoulin went in the Giro. They did Barguil in the Tour de France. They had Kelderman in the Vuelta.
What about Barguil in the Vuelta?
Barguil in the Vuelta.
He did a pretty good run there.
He got ran, that's for sure.
Sure, yes.
So I didn't see I actually didn't watch the women's one. I saw the results. Did either one of you see the women's team time trial?
I didn't see it, but like you mentioned, I saw Corin Rivera got her first world championship after a really dominant junior performance in the States. I think she's a 70-time national champion, so that was cool to see.
70 times? Yeah, you'd said 70 times. What is that, like winning 15, 12, 10 years old?
There's a lot of events in track, right?
Oh, track. I forgot.
Yeah, I think that helps.
Yeah, that's true. And then, you go to nationals, there's an event for almost anything in an age group type of thing. So that's impressive. Now, the men's, I did watch that, and that was pretty close coming down to the end. Actually, it was pretty exciting. And Sunweb beat BMC by, 8 seconds, I believe, and then another 20 seconds over Team Sky. Would you take away from that?
I think the big takeaway from that is just not just the power that Sunweb had, but also how you play your team tactics in a team time trial. If you looked at the way, I think it was Sky, handled their efforts, they blew out a couple guys early and found themselves shorthanded coming in the last few kilometers, where if they may have been in a position to pace their slower guys through, they've been able to throw in a little more effort in the end to help make up some time. I think BMC finished with four riders as well, so they kind of ran into the same issue.
Yeah, I saw, matter of fact, TJ was the last one kind of dangling there, holding on for BMC, kind of given. And it was, I think your point is exactly right, and it was obvious when you see Sunweb coming through with almost a full contingent of guys, whereas those other two were just suffering and to have anybody. And Garrett Thomas got blown out early on the Sky train as well, which was kind of surprising.
Yeah, I think he came off on the first climb, and he was kind of stating after the fact that he just didn't have the legs, and he kind of felt bad for being the selected rider in that team time trial.
Yeah, maybe motivation reasons for different people, you know, team time trial. What I'm disappointed with on the team time trial is they don't get to wear that jersey. Right? I mean, what's the point? They get a sticker on their bus.
I think they get a little notation on their kit as well. It's a small little logo, but yeah, it's definitely not much.
I've seen, you know, they have a team time trial several times during the year. I think that team should be able to wear the team time trial kit, and that would look pretty cool in a team time trial, you know, world championship kit.
Nothing prevents them from putting it on their LinkedIn. they're allowed to do that.
That is true.
LinkedIn, is that a thing?
Yes.
It's definitely a thing.
If you win a team time trial, it's on your LinkedIn.
All right. Now, I read a headline, and I didn't get a chance to look into it, that the team time trial is no longer next year. Is that true, or is that just rumor or speculation that was an opinion article without a question mark?
So it's going to be eliminated, I believe, in 2020. 2020 or 2019 was the ruling. I guess that stems from a lot of the trade teams citing the fact that it cost them a lot of money to transport all those TT bikes, when in reality, maybe two or three other guys are all that's needed to do just an individual time trial.
They should do like a mid-season European, and they used to have something like this. I'm trying to remember what it was called, but they had a two-man team time trial. They've had multiple people time trial four-man during the year, like in the European con. They can do something like that maybe instead of just always having it at Worlds. I don't know. It doesn't even matter. It's kind of it's a cool event.
It is. I think it'd be interesting to do it not from a trade team perspective, but from a country perspective, and maybe reduce it to four people to make it a little more applicable for countries with limited riders.
Well, I think they tried to do the trade teams just to kind of get a little bit more involvement and excitement. You know, they train together all the time, so it would be actually, you know, competitive. But it's always the same top five, and then you have, you know, the Joker team. Literally, that's what it was called. Like in there, I think, you know, more continental teams from Scandinavia type. I don't know. Okay, so we're not going to resolve that problem today, are we?
Team time trials in general, like whether or not we should watch them or
no, you know, I don't.
I didn't watch it.
I've kind of been
any
on
any of it.
I didn't watch any of the team time trials.
Oh
no.
Wow,
it's not. I wouldn't watch it on if it was at a Grand Tour. I wouldn't watch it. It's kind of a boring event generally. And I know everything in Bergen was pretty exciting, and I thought the courses were great. But yeah, I didn't watch it.
To completely deviate from this, did you watch any of that? There was an event or a short race. I think it was like the Challenge or something like that. It was in Europe a few months ago, where it was a stage race, and they ended it with like a team time trial with teams starting off with different lag times, and it ultimately came down to like team time trial teams overlapping other teams in corners and
never Hammer don't series, even have yes. a clue as to what you're talking about.
It was the Hammer series.
Yeah, no, there we go. I'm just kidding. Okay. The Hammer series. Yeah,
that would be a really interesting team time trial to watch. You must have watched that.
I actually didn't watch it. I listened to some podcasts about it, and it did sound exciting. And we've talked about what do you need to do to spice up cycling, and that sort of seemed like, based on what I had heard, was some of the most exciting racing of the year.
So to break that out a little bit, so they had the day before was like a circuit race, kind of like a points race type of thing, over a climb, over and over. And then that day, you determined how they set up the time trial, and they went, you know, worst to first,
right,
I guess, and first goes out and then the other teams try to, or is it the opposite? Anyway, they're chasing them based on how they finish. And the women in the Tour de France, when they had their La Course race, they did their time trial similar to that.
Oh, cool.
You know, breaking them out by how far behind they were. And it was weird though, as you heard, or maybe you did see it, where they're literally sprinting full on with each other in their TT bikes. I mean, maybe Merck style would be a little better for that.
Yeah, actually, that'd be cool to watch. I'm going to go watch the videos. That does sound cool.
Yeah, I think that with that hammer, they need to develop that a little better.
Yeah.
But it's anytime you can break out of the box. And, I think we saw this with Colorado with the shorter stages, all circuit races. You're bringing it. And look at Worlds. I mean, Worlds is a circuit race. I mean, Peter Sagan is basically becoming your best circuit racer out there. I mean, that's what he does best, it seems like. And,
yeah.
More of those is you get the crowd all involved there. Speaking of the crowd, did you have more to say on that?
No.
Okay. You had a deer in headlights look.
That was just my pitch for the team time trial, and everybody should watch them.
But speaking of the crowds and the time trial, I'm not a big fan of the individual time trial. The only one I've really enjoyed this year is Dumoulin in the Giro, where he was chasing to beat Quintana, and it was, the way they have the GPS now, you can see it, creeping in bit by bit. The time trial at Worlds this year, with the men at least, was pretty fascinating with the climb at the finish.
Yeah, I actually caught that on my drive in, and that was crazy because you had the carpet. So the guys that were trying to switch, and I think the guy who had the fastest climb time actually switched to a road bike before, what was it, like the halfway point of that TT? Was it a 20-minute TT and there was like 10 minutes on each side, or was it longer on the flat section?
I think it was longer on the flat section. They did like a lap and a half and then hit the cobbles one last time where they could take advantage of the bike switch if they wanted. I think it was a 5K climb, something like that.
Okay. All right, I know you probably have the results, but the fastest climber had about a 10-minute time, and there was only maybe 10 or 20 second difference between him and Dumoulin. Is that right?
Yeah, it's on the climb.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. So the TT itself was 31K, and I think the climb was around 4 or 5 at the most, somewhere in that range. And Roglic ended up blowing everyone out kind of on the climb, but did you happen to see, I think it was Lutsenko, he was one of the first guys to go, his bike exchange on the carpet?
I didn't see that.
It was comical, to say the least.
Didn't
quite go as well as he had hoped. It looked, someone I read, they said it looked like the carpet, his wheels had, were Velcro.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Sticking.
Yeah. So it was very unfortunate. The climb though was very reminiscent kind of the Richmond, what hill was that? Something, Libby Hill or something like
Libby.
That. Libby Hill with a big crowd, and they were going up the climb. It was pretty impressive there. And the guys who did not change bikes were still somewhat.
Would you have known that without Zwift? Let me ask.
Probably not.
No, okay. All right.
I may have done that hill on Zwift many times.
Okay. How was that on Zwift?
Oh, it was challenging. Oh, man. I don't really know. Just pedaling my trainer.
That's good. Good.
So the world's TT course, the climb was 3.4 kilo at 9%.
That's a lightweight. Kilos?
Kilometers.
At what percent?
9%.
Yeah. And the men, so the women did not use that. No one else used that climb, right?
I didn't watch that.
Okay, well, from what I could tell, they didn't. And the men did. And I thought it was the only thing that really kind of made that time trial actually worth watching, to tell you the truth.
What did you think about the bike switch?
So it was weird to put the carpet down, but I think the only reason they did the carpet was because it was on cobbles, right? And I don't mind them giving everyone, I mean, if that's, they either just say no bike switch at all, or they let them do what they want. I don't know that I really care.
What if it had been in like a really close race and it was decided by a second, and like the guy who won just had a really good push? Like whoever was pushing him was like an Olympic bobsledder or something like that, just was exceptional at it.
Cool Runnings got bid.
It just seems weird that would have played a factor potentially.
Well, if you watch it, and the word is that they had made an indication that you couldn't do much of a push at all. So it was, and so you saw some people, like
adhering to this. And then some countries that weren't, they were just like, oh, I'll be damned. And then pushing them like, you know,
right.
Moscow getting a pull from the car yesterday, you know, kind
yeah,
of thing.
There were guys on treadmills warming up for the push.
I don't know why he had running spikes on, tell you the truth. It was a little weird. And, you know, Tony Martin had made a big brouhaha about this whole thing earlier. And then when he comes and does his first lap, he rides directly over the carpet.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know why, if it was some sort of protest or other, you know, it was over cobbles. So maybe he was just trying to protect his
stay up. It out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did he go over the carpet the second time through?
I didn't pay attention to that one. I did see the guy chasing him up the climb and got hit like a linebacker.
That was a lot of people may have turned that off too, because Tony had already been, I mean, he was out of it, right? Like time had passed, but yeah, that fan got clobbered, and that's become, it seems like that's become one of the best parts of these Grand Tours and these climbs and these, you know, World Championships, is just watching some fan who, you know, thinks he's going to get on camera for all the right reasons or whatever, get clobbered by a security official. So that's,
fun. Well, it was maybe the most restrained crowd, actually, if you see that. And so it was an outlier to see this one guy, climb, and he was just running behind him. It's not like he was in the way.
Right.
The crowd in Bergen on every event I saw was really, really impressive. That day, for example, and then even the road races, the U23, the juniors, and the final day with the elites was exceptional. That
Speaking
was
cool of the elite, though, did you see the rolled up sleeping bag in the middle of the field with like 13?
Yeah, that was what
I did,
the. Are you sure it was a sleeping bag?
That's where down the
street. I heard that too, but it didn't make any sense that it would have been a sleeping bag.
A keg? Was it?
Yeah. It was like you know what it looked like? It looked like a foam roller.
Oh, well, could have been that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a European for a sleeping bag. You know, they have different words. Like,
right.
Like you want a cigarette, you know.
Give me the sleeping bag.
Do we say the word? Bundle of sticks. All right.
I don't know what the word is. I don't smoke.
Look it up. So let's go through some of these time trial results. So Tom Dumoulin ended up winning the men's, and you have in second place. Who do we have in second place here?
Primo Roglic, I believe.
Yeah. Primus Roglic from Slovenia. And he was pretty close by. And then Chris Froome actually getting third place.
Yeah, I was impressed to see Dumoulin almost catch Froome on the climb with his minute and a half lead. That would have been an interesting finish.
Do you know what they were separated? Was it a minute and a half?
They did minute and a half starts,
okay. And so you're right. He was like 58 seconds, I think, behind him.
Yeah.
And top American, 26, with TJ Van Garderen. Any comments on the Americans at Worlds this year?
I think they just had an all-around unfortunate time trial. I think, with the exception of McNulty in the U23, who got second, the other contender, Paulus, had an unfortunate mishap in his race.
But he was still ninth.
He was, which is impressive considering he hit the deck and was probably dealing with a lot of emotional stress after crashing.
So I saw that the crash, just kind of a little GIF online. And did you hear anything more about it? It looked like he was fumbling with a chain or something.
It looked like his chain had dropped and probably got caught in between his chain catcher and the frame, and he was down in there trying to reach out or pull the chain out, and he wasn't looking where he was going and drifted into the barriers and just crashed right into the barriers.
Oh, is that what it was? Because it looked like he flipped over the front wheel, so maybe the front wheel hit one of the barriers.
Right, it looked like it hit a foot of the barrier or something.
Gotcha. And, you know, so we had in the women's time trial, Annemiek van Vleuten. I think she was the lady that went down, in the Olympic road race.
Yeah,
pretty hard. Anna van der Breggen both from the Netherlands, and then Katrien Garfoot of Australia was third, and we had Chloe Dygart, American, in fourth. So. You're looking at, that's pretty much the best result there besides McNulty of the Americans. Otherwise, you know, Palace. And then otherwise, when I went through stuff, we had, you know, 50th. We had in the junior women, Summer Moak. I'm not aware of her, but she's from the USA at 18th. The junior men at time trial, Kendrick Boots at 24th. But it's a little disappointing. And, you know, is there anything you see coming up besides, I guess, Palace, and I don't know if Costa is going to make a comeback for cycling, where you expect an American to be on any kind of world championship podium other than a woman in a time trial?
McNulty.
Okay. Him in the time trial. I guess you're right. But that's U23. He's U23. Is that correct?
Yeah, he's U23. I think both himself and the kid that won are both 19. This is their first jump into non-junior ranked TT. So it was impressive to see both those guys go 1-2.
What do you think about, there's some controversy on this about the U23 and some of the guys that ride in the World Tour that are competing in the U23, and some people really got hot and bothered about it. Does that make sense? Like a World Tour guy, you know, someone at the Vuelta, now he's competing against U23 guys.
Right.
Do you have a problem with that?
I mean, you're under 23. I don't see any problem with that. I mean, good for them. They got a contract, and yeah, I don't see a problem with that.
Yeah, I don't either.
It's hard to punish them for being really fast.
Who was hot and bothered?
There was quite a bit of, I think, Mike Creed online, and it was pretty pervasive. You know, there's some bunch of debate about, well, these guys are, you know, of course they're going to do well when they had the Vuelta as their tune-up. And I'm like, well, okay. So what do you do? You know, like you said, he's 23. Is there a reason why you shouldn't? I guess it would be, this is amateur and this is professional.
Yeah, I mean, you got the other kids who've done the Tour of California, and there's still big races. I mean, where do you draw the line? I think if you're under 23, that's the line, you know, like.
Right.
You've made it that far. You shouldn't be held back from having the opportunity to go for a U23 championship just because you excelled too much.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't see a problem with it.
So let's just step right up to the big event, which was the men's, the elite road race.
And the women's elite road race.
And the women's elite road race.
Yeah.
Why don't you take the lead on the women's elite road race?
Well, I was busy. I was at work.
Is that ever an excuse?
No. We can comment on that later, but I did watch the men's race, oddly enough, but I didn't say it was the big one. That was a great event until the last, what, like 2-3K when the cameras cut out?
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
Then it got a little difficult to follow.
But even then, like, I'd sent you guys links. I saw it was overhead with the helicopter, and you didn't really miss much other than the announcers just losing their shit. Like, you know, more bikes are coming around the corner in the stationary. And I was worried that the stationary cameras were not going to be able to pick it up enough. You know, it's going to be, you know, 1K and the guys just go past. And then now you're just looking at an empty road.
Right.
But they had the stationary cameras working good enough. But even then, so you had Alaphilippe had taken off on the last climb, the Salmon Hill, I guess they call it.
Right.
And who went with him? Do you remember?
Moscon,
that's right. And who had got DQ'd because he had previously taken a pole. Like, this side, did you see that?
Previously taken a ride, or basically gotten pulled by a car.
Yeah, he did the nibbly thing. Right,
yeah.
And he was with his trade team teammate, Hanau, and they're like riding together, and all of a sudden he grabs the car, and then he's just, see ya.
He was a lot faster with car. Yeah, it was amazing what that did.
That acceleration.
Yeah, it was brutal. So anyway, he gets up there with Philippe, and take us from there, Kurt.
Well, he got dropped. I saw that he got dropped. Why do you put it on me? I don't watch it that closely, but I saw it looked like Philippe?
Yeah.
Julian
Alaphilippe.
Alaphilippe.
Frenchman.
Yeah. He dropped him, it looked like, on one of the little climbs. And then he was, you know, you couldn't see where he gets caught by the peloton. It looked like it was in the final 1.5K or maybe at like 1K. And then the finish was exactly as Chris Flower kind of predicted. Like, no one was going to stop Peter Sagan on that course.
I don't recall predicting that, but I'll take credit for it completely.
You did sort of say this looks like a course that he's going to win on.
Oh, yeah. I kind of felt that way after watching the juniors races and seeing that most everything ended in a reduced bunch sprint. That would suit him well, especially if he had been smart with his efforts and kind of just didn't do anything till the last 1 to 2K, which looks like was his plan, and that looks like what he carried out.
Yeah, he had mentioned in an interview that he, you know, he did nothing all day. He waste his energy. And when Alaphilippe went up the road, he actually thought, oh, well, there's my race. I'll be going for, you know, third, fourth, fifth on the day, and just put no energy into it at all. Where Michael Matthews ends up getting third and then kind of, you know, rues the day and saying, oh, I you know, chased things down on the climb in the last bit. And I got swamped in the last few corners. Although I looked at that again today, and I guess his point was he had to move back into position to the last corner. When they kicked, Christoph went, Sagan is right on his wheel, and Matthews is right on Sagan's wheel, like right there, and just there's a big gap
that just opens,
and he's already up sprinting. So I guess that is the legs, what, 277 kilometers?
I mean, right. You
it's are 156 or whatever miles it is. That's a little deadening, I think.
Yeah, so the helicopter view that you sent over to us and that we watched, it was amazing how patient Sagan was throughout all of that. Just like he said, he never chased. He was always sitting like 10 wheels back. And there were a lot of times when if you just looked at it from above, you would say, oh gosh, they're never going to chase down these little moves. And that patience obviously paid off at the end there. Barely, but yeah, you still got it.
So. Bike throw.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's too bad for Christoph being, Norwegian in his home country, doing everything perfect. I mean, really. You know, it's also interesting. I didn't get the camera shot was a little tough to see, but who's doing the work to bring Alaphilippe back?
Yeah,
because someone, I mean, you have all these sprinter guys, and like I said, 156 miles or whatever, you're not going to put that effort to bring that back yourself. Someone needs to do it. It looked like maybe Denmark was on the front.
Yeah, they have the red jerseys.
Orangish.
Okay, sure.
Or maybe the Netherlands. I don't know. Denmark.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Red, that would be.
I thought I heard Sagan and his kind of recap of the last few kilometers. He had indicated that Gaviria put in a big move to try and pull it back, which is interesting given that he's a sprinter himself, that he would exert that level of effort. But I think in the end, in the last 2K, it was just everybody just trying to claw it back as quick as they could, and it took a bunch of one and two up riders to do it. It looks like they caught him with 500 meters to go.
Well, I doubt Gaviria had any teammates with him, being from Argentina. Is that where he's from?
Colombia.
Yeah. Oh, are you sure?
Pretty sure.
We'll go to the tape on that one, but
I'm not going to look it up right now. But one thing that was also interesting is like a typical UCI race, you'd see a team take control and bring something back, and it didn't look like any of the countries had enough organization or enough guys left for any one country to pull things back. So it almost looked like a local race in a sense, where it's like everybody's somewhat panicking, wants to get up there, wants to be a part of, potentially trying to win. But, that's where it came back to, where I saw Sagan just sitting there, and clearly sometimes you have to be willing to lose to win. And it seemed like he was patient enough to just,
hear him say yesterday that he said, I have a bunch of friends. I don't know if he did the quotation marks, but that's the way it was, kind of intimated. I had a bunch of friends in the group who were willing to help me. Well, I just Slovak, huh?
Such a braggart.
No, I
must be nice.
I think the point is, I don't know if he had any Hansgrohe teammates. I mean, he didn't have any Slovakians up there. So if someone likes him and is willing to help out, which obviously, that's kind of what happens.
It'd be hard to imagine that there's somebody willing to do that much work for him in the last 2 kilometers of that race when they are in a position to potentially win themselves.
Everybody, right? Like 20-some guys. I mean, everyone has that possibility,
yeah.
I guess.
I think he's probably of the mindset of, I've already won two. The pressure's off me.
Oh, yeah.
I can just sit here, and if I get third, it's still a great finish.
Yeah.
So you guys go do all the work, and if there's a sprint in the end, I'll make a shot for it.
Yeah, I guess I'm surprised they didn't look at him, though, because I don't know. I would have thought they would have just been looking at Sagan, like, you want to chase that down, just like they do in almost any other race where, they all sort of sit there and say, okay, Peter Sagan, you go chase that down. We're not going to bring you to the line and let you out-sprint us. So the dynamics were different than like a typical classic.
Right.
But then you have, Van Avermaet, I think he was fourth, right? Somewhere around there, fourth, fifth, somewhere there, which he's beat Sagan in sprints like this before. Michael Matthews definitely wants that. I mean, he'd rather have a chance at it than not.
Right.
Christoph, same thing. So while they're going to wait for him, they're also going to be like, we're not going to let Alaphilippe win this.
Right.
Let's get at it.
Yeah, true.
I think in the end, though, the jump for Sagan and Christoph was just so much more significant than 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, whoever else was in that pack. I mean, it was a distinct 1-2, and anybody else was just left in the dust.
Yeah, I got the impression looking at Matthews from the overhead, where you could barely see his head in the picture still because there was a gap there, that he was doing what he could just to hang on to make sure he got third.
Yeah.
And I know he was obviously wanted to do better, but how about the women's race? Chantel Black, did we mention her? Yeah, she of Netherlands, she won. And then Garfoot from Australia was also second again. And Annemalie Diedrichsen of Denmark, and then Corn Rivera was 18th. Corn had said, she goes, I don't think these climbs are going to affect me. I'm going to be able to get over. And she's been able to do that. And she has one of the best kicks in the group. I didn't see where she came in other than she was 18th. But as far as time-wise, I think the lady that won I did see that actually, and she soloed off the front, which is a pretty impressive fashion.
It looked like she had crashed at some point in the race as well. Yeah, she was kind of banged up.
Yeah, I just thought it was a weird kit design until I saw the blood on her arm.
Right.
So once again, we didn't have any other good Americans showing. No wins. I didn't also see any Norwegian wins. You know, home country getting their first place.
Seems to be a good streak, though. I don't think anybody from Qatar won last year, right? Nobody from the States won the year before that.
You know, that's funny because you have Richmond, which has got such good accolades for their crowd and such a great atmosphere. And then you go to Doha, and it's just there's nothing but sand out there. And now you have, you know, Norway with this huge crowds once again. And Peter Sagan made the comment, you know, something like exactly that, you know.
Yeah, it was, again, the crowds were impressive. It was just a dozen deep throughout the entire course, which is awesome to see. And I think for the racers, that's got to be a better experience than kind of racing for nobody.
Yeah, there was, speaking of the crowds, and then you had the, what was the mattress or the
sleeping bag
in the crowd. There was a Marco Haller, I think he's from Austria. He was going on the barriers and he caught someone's jacket and fell down, and then he gets the jacket and he starts going to the crowd and just berating them and yelling and hollering and then throws the jacket at like the motorcycle. I don't know.
I did not see that.
Sounds like a trip to the Costco gas station.
By the way, that was Sam's Club.
Oh, my bad.
Sorry, that guy was a total dick. That's a different story. So we had, what else do we have going on? We had our cycling season is pretty much done, and we had our final Criterium coming up. Before we go on to that, did you have anything else?
Yeah, I was just going to think about Worlds and kind of looking at next year with that course recently announced. It looks like it'll take a considerable effort for Sagan to four-peat, I think, next year in Austria. It looks like a totally different course, a lot of different dynamics. So it should be an interesting one to tune into.
Yeah, what's different?
It's all downhill. A lot of climbing.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks really brutal, like a Kwiatkowski type. Or, you know, it's probably maybe like the Olympics, you know, that kind of thing where the climbing was really brutal. It's in Austria, right?
Right.
Yeah, so it looks like a climber's race, not a sprinter's.
Gotcha.
I just wanted to say real quick, I really love it when, and you may hate Sagan, you may hate Froome, you know, whoever, whatever. And I'm not saying either one of you do.
No, but he's successful, so.
So exactly, you hate success. We've established that previously. But what I do love to see is a prominent winner wearing the rainbow jersey the following year.
Right.
Yeah. To me, that's I would love to see a Grand Tour contender once again. Cadel is probably the last one that we've seen, you know, wearing the jersey and having a successful year. You know, Peter has had the jersey obviously a couple of years and. He's winning in it. I'd love to see that. I hate that. I don't know if you remember who Maurizio Frondrist was. This guy back in 1988. I don't know why this one sticks in my craw, but he basically gets a draft out on the break with Steve Bauer and trying to remember Claude Kerkelion, a Belgian guy that was just famous. And these two guys are going to the sprint. These three coming up for the sprint. There's no way Frondrist is going to get anything but a bronze. And Steve Bauer and Kerkelion crash each other out.
Oh, no.
This guy drifts over the line and wins. He'd won basically nothing before. He wins basically nothing after. But he's world champion in 1988, and that's his lot in life. And I'm not a big fan of that kind of thing because then that's what bleeds into the thing, oh, you've got the world championship curse. Well, no, you got one lucky race, and it's not going to happen again.
Right.
Did you research my... No. Verify it?
No, but I mean, that's why you're a big Celtics fan and you're a big Yankees fan.
I'm not a Celtics fan at all.
You were a Steelers fan in the 70s?
No, I hated the Cowboys towel. Fan in the... If you want, I'll give you a rundown of all the teams. Some do sound like bandwagon, I must say.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
You want to give a rundown?
No.
Go ahead. It sounds like I stopped.
Well, that'll be my other podcast.
Okay.
So it's back to the local stuff. We had the Oakland Grand Prix, which was our districts for the elite P1-2. And Willie had won that a few times. Check back on our last podcast with Willie Myers. Good conversation. Who do we end up getting winning that race over there?
So Stephen Vogel ended up getting the victory. And Roman Kaloon took second. And Owen, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Gillette took third.
We did have Garrett and Willie in fourth and fifth. So that's and our former DDA teammate, Robert Terra, coming up in seventh, which is pretty impressive.
Soon to be a district champion.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they separated out the U23 in that race as well. So I think he was second or third for the U23.
Yeah.
Kid's got a lot going on. Really good strategic racer and strong kid as well. He rides for Williams. So it was good to see there. As far as the women go, Hannah Muggy from the Visit Dallas DNA Pro Cycling Team. Don't know much about them. Oh, I've seen it, but
she's a local.
She's a local Bay Area, and she seems to be winning everything this year. That's what I could tell.
Correct.
Yeah. Anything else you guys have on that? Did you watch any? I did not go to that race, and/or did I see anything other than the results? I saw a few little snippets online.
Yeah, I just tried to infer some race context from pictures that Alex Chu took, and it looked like there was a three-man break that ended up in a two-man sprint. That's my play-by-play.
Have you done that race?
I have, but I haven't done... They did a new course this year. I don't know if that was some road access limitations or not, but I have raced there in the past. It's a cool course. It's a cool setting. It's a little like the Giro, San Francisco. Nice little downtown vibe. I think, Kurt, you've won there. Solo.
Yeah, obviously a lower category.
I didn't say that. I just said you won.
Yeah, it's a good... I mean, it's a cool... It's an in-city, you know, downtown criterium. So that's... Those are few and far between. So it's always a fun event. I haven't done it the last couple of years, and I regret it every time. I think I tried to do it this year, tried to get somebody to go with me, but nobody wanted to go. So
doesn't sound right.
Yeah, this sounds like a horrible car ride.
It's a long way to Oakland, is what you mean, right?
Yes, yeah, yeah. So our race season is over. Let's do a little kind of a recap on some of these news items of the week. One of them we have is Tyler Farrar retired. I don't know if you guys know much about him, but former good sprinter.
He's like the TJ Van Garder in a sprinter, right?
I like TJ's hair better. Not a big deal. What do you mean by he's the TJ Van Garderen of sprinting?
So he's like always a sprinter version. Like he's the good American sprinter. That's what I mean. What do you mean?
It's always just close enough. But
he's won some Grand Tour races.
Yes.
I don't know if he won a Tour de France stage. I think he won a Vuelta. I don't think he won all three. But you know what? 15 years in the pro ranks. Not too bad. Really came off like the last few years. That I didn't even really. I thought he'd retired 2 years ago. Honestly, no offense, Tyler. But you're seeing, you know, who do we have? You know, we kind of mentioned this with the Worlds thing, right? Of who do we have coming up? We don't have. It's frustrating because there's definitely no sprinters that I see. Alex Howes was 53rd in the road race. He was our top American. You know, we don't really have.
Yeah, it's like Lawson Craddock. I mean, he was on, you know, Giant. And I don't know what he did this year.
Nothing.
Yeah, he's kind of.
Didn't he change teams recently?
Yeah, but I mean, this year he's been absent.
Right.
And like, if you went back to the 2016 season, it seemed like he had some promising results and looked like he was emerging as someone that was going to be good. But I'm not sure what happened to him.
Yeah, I don't know.
We should research that.
I'm trying.
He did. I heard something because he was having a lot of trouble in Colorado. I mean, he was getting dropped off. Way back early, and you know, riding with a bunch of these Conti guys, and I don't know if he'd been injured and had some problems with you know, trying to regroup on that or some sickness, but you know, it's a little disappointing. I saw this on Twitter. Throw this out there for you guys. This, and I sent you the picture of it. It's Chris Froome. You know, it's kind of mocking or doing the same thing that Cipollini had done, where he was naked on a bike.
Yeah.
And so Chris Froome is naked on a bike, and it's, I don't know what the point of it all is, other than it shows his right hip kind of smashed up, and his, you know, I mean, he's a freaking cyclist. Everyone in cyclists looks like they're just been rescued from a concentration camp in like World War II.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So this, there's this, this, female, I don't know. Do you even want to go down this road? This female journalist. And she tweets out, this is what she wrote about it. She put the picture and she said, just no words. I know Sky has doctors, but this cannot be healthy for any human being, okay?
Yeah, and I mean, I looked at him. He didn't look unhealthy. He looked fine. I don't know what the whole deal was. It seemed weird.
Maybe just the scarring. That must be what that was in reference to.
Well, what the interesting thing is that this caused a reaction from Frim's wife, who's now deleted her Twitter account. Because Frim's wife basically went after this lady and basically kind of fat-shamed her. She's and it was a little crazy. What do you think of wife's doing that on Twitter?
My wives can do whatever they want, right, Tyler? Isn't that what you always say?
Yes.
I don't have an angle on that. I will say, I'll call this. I feel like Phil Guymon's going to do a similar shot someday with
a cookie covering his privates.
Yeah, something terrible. And we're all going to hate it. And no one's going to say anything. And people will laugh at him on Twitter.
Here's what Michelle Frim wrote back, okay? She wrote, well, because one thing, this Jose Bean is a journalist, and she wrote, one last thing, I'm really proud of how my body survived cancer, and I'm proud of how I ride and lose weight now, 33% fat and all. So she's a bit over Chris's weight. So then Michelle Frim responds, surviving cancer doesn't mean you're not she says the British version, arsehole. Just look at Lance Armstrong. Stop spreading lies about me. I've got the screenshots.
I haven't followed the story. Chris, do you have anything to say about this one?
No.
Yeah, Tyler's been on. This is like a week old story. Go ahead.
When you say week old story, is that like it's been a week long, or it's a really weak story?
Yeah.
Okay, so the UCI, we'll just step right into a different topic. The UCI elected a new president.
Did you want to? You don't want to say anything about Phil Guymon and his uniform or his kit?
The kit is. Have you seen his cookie kit?
Yeah, I've seen it.
It's the ugliest thing I've seen since that. What was the team that like was Futon or some Fudo Cerveto that our friend Eric Brickler wore one time because some pro gave it to him?
Something. Yeah, that brown jersey.
It's uglier than that. And I keep seeing people post, hey, look, I got my cookie. And it's like, it's a cookie. I don't know.
That whole thing's not very cute.
It's been played.
I don't get it. Yeah. But
I wouldn't buy it.
I like cookies. I'm not getting much attention for it, though, unfortunately.
Would you get a jersey? What else do you like?
I like a lot of things, but
would you get a jersey with that?
No.
With one of the ugliest colors possible. I mean, you could have a different color cookie. You could have a white chocolate macadamia nut cookie.
Ooh.
Better than a chocolate chip cookie.
That's true. No, I just don't get the excitement behind it.
Yeah. I guess it's his thing. I would do tacos, personally.
Yeah.
It's like, we have a local team with tacos on their jersey.
Yeah, they don't have it anymore, but it was creatively done, at least designed with it, like the half of the taco coming
was
out
it
of the
creatively.
It was awful. It was bad, but they sold out, and that's what they did.
No.
That's what they chose to do, right?
No, like, that's true.
You can't fault them. They probably got some good stuff out of that.
Coupons, I think, to the local chain.
Yeah,
that's buy one, get one free.
Such a weird deal. What people will do.
What's your plans for the winter for riding? We did a ride yesterday, Data Driven Athlete Open Ride.
Yeah.
And sponsored or kind of headed up, I guess, by Nate Dunn and the other coaches, right?
And very much so.
Yeah.
Yes.
So why don't you describe the ride, talk about it a little bit, and I'll let you go from there, Kurt.
So yeah, it was 55 miles through the foothills. It was like 3,072 feet of climbing, roughly thereabouts. Yeah, it was a really cool ride, like especially for this time of year. It was really, it was pretty easy for most of it, and then there was one big climb, which is it's under 7 minutes if you're anybody, and it's a little over 7 minutes if you're the rest of us. And am I even allowed to talk about that climb?
I would just say it's 7 minutes on the dot. That's where you want to aim.
Right, exactly. And then everybody kind of goes all out there, and then you come back together. To me, it was a lot of fun. It was cool. It was fun to do that ride.
There's no Sunday rides. I don't know why that is. Everything gets ramped up for Saturday, and then Sunday's kind of a petered out day. Not sure why that is. So I guess their deal is to just try to get something going on Sunday. That fits people's schedule. And the idea is kind of, from what I got, was we're not going to hammer it. We're just going to have a conversation pace, maybe a little bit more, a little bit less, depending on who all joins in.
Right. That's what we saw. Like as we were coming back, I think you actually looked around and you said, "Oh, okay, well, we can probably go a little bit harder at this point." And then we went a little bit harder based on who was left. Yeah. And that was fun. It was good.
Yeah. It wasn't a race ride by any means. It was definitely a more casual ride, but a good experience.
Yeah, no one was chasing.
Yeah, so you know if you're out in the Folsom area on a Sunday, I think they leave from Coffee Republic. It's kind of an idea. 8:30. Yeah.
To answer your question, what are you doing for winter?
Yeah.
I've been kind of looking for a new trainer to help my winter training move along. So I'm looking at direct
like
drive.
CrossFit trainer.
No. Definitely not that kind of trainer.
The bike trainer.
Like a bike trainer. Looking at a direct drive trainer. So that's kind of where I'm headed now. May or may not do Zwift, but definitely looking to stay in shape with the trainer.
A direct drive. So you take off the rear wheel, put it on there type of thing?
That is correct.
And what's the advantage to all that?
I don't have to put a trainer tire on my wheel.
Okay. So you just have to hook your chain into the...
Yeah. It feels more professional, I think.
Yeah, I like that. You know, one of my problems with the train, I don't get too personal with mine though, is the way it locks into my frame, and you know, different frames are all made differently right around the rear skewer area, and it compresses my car. I swear it's like pushing, probably has voided the warranty or something by having the way that this locks onto my bike with the carbon. So
you may want to get that looked at.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea. What brand do you use for?
Well, I'm still shopping, so I don't have one yet.
This is non-committal.
I really, yeah. Are you I don't know yet.
Are you going to do like you do with your bikes, where you have like, you know, about 15 different versions throughout the year?
Yes, that's the plan. Try and find the best one, and then just leave the others in the garage, knowing that one day I'll throw them away or something.
Just get a Wahoo kicker, like everybody else. That's what everybody gets. I don't know.
Wahoo's really made kind of a break into the cycling world, haven't they?
Yeah.
But for the name, I'd be all on board.
Right. Well,
you prefer kicker? Cyclops?
Well, they also have the ticker, which is the heart rate monitor. So that, yeah. That makes sense. And then the element, which is their computer, but which makes no sense, or the bolt. But no, their products are great. Like, they've got good technology. Everything works really well. You were looking at some fan-based one?
I'm looking at the Le Mans Revolution.
Okay.
It's fan-driven, so it's not a smart trainer. It doesn't adjust based on like an ERG-type setup or anything. But it gets good reviews, and it's relatively inexpensive.
Speaking of products, you know, you had commented about this before. So Team Aqua Blue is using a new bike next year.
The one by
3T. And what did you see? So no front changing derailleur, obviously just one.
I thought it was just a front derailleur only is what they meant by one by.
Okay. That'd be, you know, we're on a ride yesterday and kind of going up this little climb, and I won't say who it was. How you doing? Makes a comment about glad his bike is rear wheel driven, and you know, there's a conversation. I don't know how, and I've thought about it. I don't think you can have a front wheel drive bike just due to the fact that you're turning the wheel, right?
You need to like have some type of rear articulating wheel.
Yeah, so
be interesting.
Yeah, maybe one of the early designs with the Wright brothers. They had one. Oh, the old time bikes. You like the old time bikes? You know, with the big wheel. So did you check out all the specs on what Aqua Blue is going to be riding?
I wouldn't say I checked out all the specs. I did some quick glancing, and it looks like they tried to merge every new fad into one bike with the one by the disc and the ability to accept wide tires and making it aero. It's like all the boxes are checked. Let's go.
Yeah. They're just missing a camelback, that spritzer, maybe thing in the face. And,
I think there's space for that.
Yeah. But that's really interesting because I think I'm trying to. It seems like it was in the back was like 11 by 40.
Yeah.
And did you know what the front was gear?
I think it's variable, but I think they're probably running on like a 50.
Yeah, I guess variable would be right, but only before you start the race. Because right. Mine's variable between two different.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's what makes it the one by is
it's kind of really locked into that one.
You know, this may have degraded to a point where we should probably just cut it quick. Kurt's giving me the cut sign. All right. So as far as we have no other races coming up, there's nothing big going on. So we'll get back into some other interviews, join up with the three of us yahoos on some more ideas. some training ideas. Kurt, you have any other tech? I always go for you for tech stuff, and then Chris is the one that ends up coming through with the goods.
But okay, so Chris, what would you like to talk about?
I'm interested in hearing about your winter plans for your smart trainer that you're tethering to an adjustable.
Oh, the climber?
Your climber trainer.
Yeah, I haven't purchased the climber. The climber's not available until November, but there's another thing that the Kicker or the Wahoo companies sort of pioneering. So they've developed like a device that hooks up to the front fork on your bike that obviously communicates with the trainer and then communicates with like your video game, like Swift.
Did you say front wheel drive?
No, I didn't. I said the front fork. In any event, so it, like as you're going up a climb, if you were doing the Richmond course, it would be like Libby Hill, probably. Mm. It could raise the front fork so that you would get the feeling of like actually climbing, which is, I mean, it's pretty, again, those things are really cool. They've sort of changed the way people do training in the winter, and you can tell, actually, come spring, like, people who've been doing that, it's kind of frustrating. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be exciting to do once it comes out.
Have you checked the Farmer's Almanac to see what kind of weather we have coming up this next year, to see if it's going to be a wet one, you're going to have to do more indoor training, or can we get out?
I have not, Tyler, but I'm hoping for a wet season.
Okay.
To reduce your riding or to increase your trainer time?
No, for the health of California.
Oh, what a guy.
Yeah, last year we Oroville Dam wasn't asking for that.
Well, yeah, there's a certain point where you probably have to turn the rain off. But, yeah, I don't know. Gosh, did they get that repaired?
You don't repair here in California, Kurt. You just, it dissipates, and then you just wait till it happens again, and then you complain about it.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I'd still hope for a wet season, and hopefully they fix the Oroville Dam, and everybody's better off.
Do you get snow where you're at?
I do get snow. Ooh, okay. Yeah, so that'll be interesting as well.
So you've got to really come prepared for the winter riding with gloves, booties, all that stuff.
Yeah,
face masks.
You guys get lucky a little. I mean, obviously I lived here, but you can go outside at night and ride if you want to. I mean, it's still not fun, but. At least you can. Up there, it's pretty difficult to want to do that, to be honest. Indoor training.
Did you you didn't grow up in California, is that correct, Kurt?
No, I grew up in Michigan.
Okay, in Michigan. So, but did you ride when you lived in Michigan?
No. I mean, as a kid, I did. Not like, not like this.
What'd you do for sports?
Played basketball, baseball, golf. Yeah.
Hockey.
We did do hockey. I wasn't like, not like good.
Yeah. So you, like me, I grew up in the Northwest and, the winters were pretty, for us, socked in and you hey, I had to shovel my driveway to play basketball outside.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or to go riding, and just didn't happen.
But you were into cycling, right?
I was. So you just waited.
Oh, so you just weren't fit until like June.
Yeah.
Did you have a trainer as a kid?
So I would have a trainer.
How old were you?
Well, I got into riding like in eighth grade, but didn't really start doing stuff until like my freshman year in high school.
Who got you into it?
I watched, I was at home one night and TV was on, and it was the movie Breaking Away.
Okay, yeah.
And I just was fascinated, and then went to the library and started checking out bike magazines and stole my sister's Schwinn or something like that.
Okay, yeah. So you already had, access to a bike.
Yeah, and then I had bikes, and then I got my bike. And then when I was in high school, there were friends there that rode. And I had no concept of like, those what are those cut off like long underwear?
They like rode like serious like racing? Or?
Yeah. So I grew up in Walla Walla. Okay, yeah. And I don't know if you've ever heard of grab on grips.
No.
There's like these foam grips that you had on bikes, like when you were a younger kid, you did the foam. Anyway, then they made like little grips for pencils and stuff. This is really big. And they ended up having a professional team. And in Walla Walla, this whole company was based out of Walla Walla. Okay.
Right.
And did you really want to go down this road? Point is, Steve Speaks, professional, had lived there. There were several other ones. And they had actual big time riders that would come through town and do stuff. I kind of got involved, not with them, but with people that knew them and then they were riding. And so it was just kind of.
You guys did group rides on the weekends?
So, yeah, there were a few guys. Steve Smith really got me into cycling. He actually is, I think, the head of Castelli now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He and some other guys.
Could you make a call for us?
I probably could.
Jeez.
I don't know. Steve? Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually looked him up the other day because there was an article with him. He was mentioned in there with Sky and some other stuff. And I can't find him. I mean, Steve Smith, that's a really common name.
Right.
So, you know, right, Facebook, yes. How much time do I want to dig
NFL
through that?
Wide receiver. Did you race in high school?
I did race in high school.
Okay. What was the scene like? Was it big or?
So I had no races near me at all. And then there were, except the college that was right there where I grew up, they would have some race, and our high school had a race. So I would do like that race. And then I didn't do any sanctioned race until I graduated. And then it was, the first race I did was in Idaho. I did travel.
But the high school sponsored like a road race?
They did like a whole week of, you know, like athletic stuff, you know, track racing, track and all stuff, running race, and a bike race was part of that deal. As a matter of fact, then they would do like a triathlon where you could do team triathlon, and I'd do the biking portion.
Yeah. Wow. That's okay. That's cool. Yeah. I don't know of any high schools that have like, well, I guess it almost sounds like a presidential physical fitness week that they were doing or something along those lines.
I don't know. Someone that got into cycling decided to start it, and then it just kind of carried on. And,
okay.
But my first one I did as a freshman, there was I ended up with the front group of like, I don't know, I want to say seven of us.
What year is this?
My freshman year in high school, like 85.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think somewhere in there.
So like 7-Eleven is a big team in the United States, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Well, 85 was, I think, their first year that they went and did the Giro. Andy Hampson over there. But I wasn't big I didn't get into the pro side of cycling, of being a fan, until after Greg LeMond won the 86 Tour. My dad tells me, hey, this American's doing really well. He's from like California. And I had no idea what the Tour de France was. And that's when I got involved. Anyway, so
and you'd only see it through magazines or I know you've mentioned before ABC Sports did the world or Wide World of Sports on like Sundays or
CBS, and they would do a recap, and it would be John Tesh music, which is kind of like Yanni, if you know what that is, and he would sit there on his and he'd I got the Tour de France John Tesh music too.
Was he a musician? Because like I remember him.
He was a
like,
musician to begin with. Yeah, okay. So it was all this, you know, symphony or this electric keyboard type of stuff. Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
This has turned into a little awkward.
It's good background. Break good into history.
I was just going to say about so that my freshman year. Okay, there's like five or seven of us coming down. We had some climbing in the race, and we're coming down, and there's like a last corner turn. It's probably like 700 meters or so to the finish, and right before the corner, you know. Guys are in tennis shoes, some are in real bike gear. It's a mishmash, and someone at the front goes down, and I kind of crumble into them. My friend, who actually owned a Trek, and he knew what he was doing. Right. He and another guy, my friend wins, and I'm the only one left of everybody that didn't flat or tackle their tire. I roll in third place, so
podium,
you know,
podium, yeah,
podium, totally. I
like
might
a
have
legit
a real,
podium,
right?
Yeah, I think I had a cycling cap on, so that kept me safe.
Yeah. Little cotton there.
Yeah.
So how long was that race? Just curious.
Maybe that's a really good question. I want to say maybe 12, 15 miles, something like that. I had a little loop, little climb in it. So yeah. At the time it was pretty brutal for me.
I imagine.
Yeah. The next year I did not get a chance to defend myself. I had mono.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. And that's
suffering a little sickness lately too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've been ill.
Over it.
I'm feeling better, so we'll see what happens with that.
Who's the most famous person from Walla Walla?
Famous person or cycling famous person?
No, famous person.
Tony Gwynn played baseball there, as did Kurt Russell, by the way. Probably the most famous from there would be Batman himself, though. Adam West. His mother still lives there in town. Well, she did. I'm sure she's dead now. But Adam West went to college there. And, Dirk Benedict, face man from the A-Team.
Oh, yeah, I liked him. He was cool. Yeah.
He went to college there. I don't know if he's
Tyler.
From there. Steve Speaks, though, had I don't know if you knew
Do you know
he
Tanya
was,
Cooley?
Who?
Tanya Cooley.
No, who's that?
She's from The Real World.
Is she from Walla Walla?
She was.
Really?
Yeah, I think she was in the first three seasons. That's how I know. Like, when you say Walla Walla, I'm like, oh, that's where Tanya Cooley's from.
Well, there's this Simpsons episode, okay, where Homer decides to go to clown college. So he's getting taught by Krusty the Clown. And Krusty's like, hey, you know, you wanted laughs. You had to come up with funny names, you know, names of cities. So he goes like Cucamonga, Walla Walla, Seattle. Now, Seattle's the one that Homer laughs at, but, you know, Walla Walla gets thrown in there as well. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, we could probably end it on that unless you boys had something else you wanted to throw in. And Chris, we'll break down where you grew up and everything maybe another time.
I'll prep quite thoroughly.
Probably don't need to prep, just need to tell us your life, you know, when we ask the questions.
So. Fair enough.
Thanks for joining us. Kurt, thank you.
Sure, thank you.
Chris, thank you.
Yeah, very welcome.